you know, and Justin and I talked about this film quite a long time ago when we did our Burton and Schumacher Batchman.
Batchman. You Batchman?
Is the party over?
Not yet, Arnold. Not yet, believe it or not.
In the world of Herndon, Virginia and Endicott, blah, 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 two epic film guys dissect the newest movie trailers in a little segment we like to call Epic Previews.
All right, we're going to go live in 5, 4, 3, 2. And welcome. Ugh. Goddamn dog hair. Just kidding. It was really a dick in my mouth. Oh my God, seriously, Nick, I swear, I don't even know what to do. All right. In 5, 4, 3, 2. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And thanks for sticking with us here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. This has been waiting in... One more time. 5, 4, 3, 2.
They're drinking, Drano.
You're supposed to have an efficient police department, and yet you can't catch a third-rate hoodlum who masquerades as a monkey.
Game over, man. It's game over.
No, no, no. Go past this. Past this part. In fact, never play this again.
Hey, buddy, you gonna eat that sausage?
Am I the only one around here who gives a shit about the rules?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Your complete attention, if you please.
You are listening to the Epic Film Guys podcast.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 102 of the Epic Film Guys podcast for Thursday, June the 15th, 2017. My name is Justin, and welcome to the Epic Film Guys podcast. You'll immediately notice something different about the opening of this show this week. Yes, that's correct. I am not Epic Film Guy Nick. He is very well taking a break for this week, so I am joined by Loy Sauce to fill in to cover for this entire episode. Welcome to the show, Loy Sauce.
Yes, hello. It's your boy, Loy Sauce, coming at you.
The god of podcasting, self-proclaimed, if I recall, and he is on the show tonight. We have a lot of stuff for you guys. Really excited about the show. It sucks that Nick could not make it, but hey, the guy works super, super hard on this show. We all respect him so much and appreciate all the work he does for the Epic Film Guys podcast. So a break or a week off is much deserved. So, Brian, how you doing, man? How you doing today? What's going on in the world of
Loy Sauce?
I'm doing very well, Justin. I turned 24 years old in a couple hours.
Wow.
Yeah. You'll remember 1 year ago today, we were recording the Warcraft review. So anyone who's listening who wants to go back to the archives and check out, I don't know what episode number it was, but our review of The Conjuring 2 and Warcraft, you can hear me turn 23 on the air.
Wow. And it's funny to think, Brian, because I never would have thought that anyone would remember that movie in the public consciousness as it is. I don't hear or see anyone ever talking about it. So it shows what kind of impact Duncan Jones made with that one. Ah. Man,
I follow Duncan Jones on Twitter, and he retweets and responds to people all the time saying, when's a Warcraft sequel coming? When's a Warcraft
Never.
Sequel coming?
Please,
so there
no.
are people out there. There are people out there who are fans of this film and want a second one, I guess.
Yeah, don't see it happening. And please, please, no. I mean, hey, it's for some people. I get it. I totally do. But yeah, I mean,
you know what? You know what? China loved it. So if a sequel gets made, it's because of China.
China loves crap, though, man. They really do. They like good stuff.
It's why we have Transformers 5 coming out.
I know. And, you know, I haven't even decided yet. Me and Nick haven't talked about it. I really am just... It comes out this week, actually. I just recalled that...
No, next week.
Next week? Is it? All right. All right. So next week. I don't even know if I'm going to have to see it. I really don't want to have to do it. Me and Nick...
I'll see it.
We watch everything. So, hey, there you go. Why don't you do like a mini-sode? You can bring whoever you want. Someone from the Movie Pod Squad. You handle it. Why don't you and Director Brennick handle it? There you go. You guys still have that Terminator 2 review to do later on this summer. So we have that to look forward to. Something very, very special is happening for your birthday tomorrow, Brian, at the Alamo Draft House. I'm super excited about it. Why don't you tell our listeners what's happening for your birthday at Alamo tomorrow?
Well, I am part of the creative team at Alamo Draft House, and as part of my job, I have a certain level of input as to what movies show when. And so when I was approached by the creative manager, Gabriel, he came to me and said, Brian, what movie do you want to show on your birthday? And I said, well, Gabe, let's show Death Wish 3, a movie that is very near and dear to my heart. You actually introduced me to the world of Charles Bronson, Justin, and I became a fan of Death Wish 3 and its gratuitous, over-the-top violence. And I just thought, you know, let's just have a high-octane, mindless action flick. I think that would be the perfect way to spend my birthday in a movie theater watching Charles Bronson blow some creeps away. So,
dude, I can't wait.
I'm very excited. I'm very excited.
So excited. And, you know, so excited to the point because I am someone that, you know, you come into my apartment, I have a Death Wish 3 theatrical poster on my wall, which my wife allows it.
Original poster.
Original. That's correct. So Bronson's my favorite. And of course, Nick is going to cue in the, you going to eat that sausage? I'm sure he already did. But, you know, Bronson's sausage. One of my favorites. And so not only just for your birthday, but the simple fact that since I've lived here, I love Alamo Drafthouse. I talk about it on the show all the time. You know, it's the first time a Bronson movie will be seen on the big screen since I've lived here, and a Death Wish film nonetheless. So I went out of my way here and I got a hold of author and film historian and Bronson expert Paul Talbot, who wrote the Bronson Loose books, Bronson's Loose, The Making of the Death Wish Films, and Bronson's Loose Again, which covers all of his other movies. And he actually, as a favor, did a video intro, which was fantastic, which this will air after that screening. So we'll talk about it a little bit next week, how fans reacted to that. But I thought it was fantastic that he went and he had like a professional video person come in and shoot it for us. So it's going to be a great time. I'm really excited. And we do have that Bronson's Loose book to give away at the screening. So really, really looking forward to that, Brian. It's going to be a great birthday present for you. And another thing film related that we're doing this weekend. I mean, it's film stuff jam-packed. We're doing something really awesome. What are we doing, dude?
We are going to Mahoning, Pennsylvania, to a drive-in theater, a historic drive-in theater that they have there in Mahoning. And we are going to watch a double feature of Tim Burton's Batman and Batman Returns projected in 35mm on a huge drive-in screen.
That is correct. And those of you out there that have listened to our episodes for a while, last summer, Loy Sauce and I had the opportunity to go there for Camp Blood Part 2, where they showed some slashers. We had to see The Burning, and it was a fantastic time. Amazing historic drive-in theater. I love it. There's a feeling you get when you drive into that place like no other feeling in the entire world. One of the best theatrical experiences I've ever felt my entire life. So I'm super looking forward to it, and I'm pretty sure that the Hopester's best friend and hardcore fan, Patrick Sherwood, will be meeting us there at the showing. So looking forward to that too. So we'll be briefing you guys on that next week and how that went. But other than that, man, I mean, this is it. We got some stuff lined up for you guys. We're going to do a full Mummy review as our featured review. But I did have the opportunity to see another film over the weekend before we get to that. I'm not going to do a full review of it for you guys, but I did want to touch on it because I did think it was at least worth talking about. A lot of other people are reviewing it right now, and I did have a lot to say about it, but I'll keep it brief. That is It Comes at Night, the psychological horror film written and directed by Trey Edward Schultz. He's known for directing the film Krisha, which I have not seen, which I openly admit, but I heard it was really good. The trailers for this movie, which I'll be getting into in a little bit here, were fantastic. It's an A24 produced film, which at this point in time, I feel like if it has A24 on it, Brian, I'm going to watch it. They've had a really good track record so far, so it's very rare when I watch one of their films where I'm let down or disappointed. They're usually good or solid or very, very good. And I know you have not had the opportunity to see this movie, so I'll try to keep it as spoilerish free as possible, but I'm going to get into some stuff. And the subject that I want to get into real quick as I'm talking about this movie is trailers. And, you know, trailers are a big thing now, obviously. Trailers are the reason people go to see a movie, or if they decide they don't like the trailer, they decide not to see it. In this case, I feel like the trailers for It Comes at Night were extremely well done. Atmospheric, well shot. You got a real sense of this terror that is going to be inflicted upon yourself when you watch this movie. Unfortunately, Brian, the trailer was somewhat misleading, and that's something that I want to get into right now. The film shows some scenes, kind of giving off the idea that there may be some supernatural elements in It Comes at Night. Maybe a spirit, maybe a ghost, maybe some zombies, maybe some kind of creature that lurks in the wood that comes at night to just scour these people and terrify them and try to get into their house and eat them or kill them or something. But none of that is in the film at all whatsoever. This is, at its core, a very human story. And this is just a family. They've undergone basically a worldwide epidemic where there's this contagious disease that's just taking people out all over the place. And this family that is living out in the country in this house, they've got their windows boarded up. There's no electricity. There's no technology. They're just out there. They're basically just trying to survive. So It Comes at Night is basically this survival semi-horror film. It's just a small, very claustrophobic movie about a family and them trying to survive dealing with this epidemic. Now, in the movie, if you come in contact with someone that is sick or that has this disease, you get sick too, and you turn into what you look, what looks kind of like a zombie, but you kind of turn into this mindless person that is contagious with this sickness. And it will kill anyone else around them. So this family is dealing with this, fronted by the father figure played by Joel Edgerton, who's fantastic in the film and a great cast. So the film opens up and we witness this family losing one of the most important members of its family, their grandfather. And the way they have to end his life because he's sick was just, it completely took me out of the movie. It's so violent, so surreal, but so realistic and how things would actually happen in this situation. So we get a sense of where they're going with the movie, and they witness another person trying to break into their home at some point because they're trying to look for water and food. They decided to take that person in and their family in good trust so that, you know, they could kind of gather their goods together. They can kind of become a team and try to live in this house together and gain all that they can out of having more people around. Shit hits the fan, hijinks ensue, as Lysos would always say, and we get some awesome, horrific moments. But most of the horror is in the human nature that we witness and how people get in these situations where you're literally in survival mode, you have a family, it's life or death, and you see people act and react to these things that are happening to them to basically save their family, to survive in this world. And, you know, I feel like in that sense, it was a very solid movie. I think it did a fantastic job at, you know, a social commentary on how we as humans deal with these situations and how we interact with each other and how we literally lose any kind of emotion when it comes to certain things. And we're not, you know, we will not let anything take our family from us. And it's hard for us to grieve and deal with death and how we deal with death in these situations. And I feel like the one thing that I really took away from it that bothered me the most was, you know, that trailer, and it gave these kind of ideas that we were going to have a supernatural feeling in the movie. It's only there in dream sequences. I'll tell you that much right now. But they're very well done. I did get a couple of jumps and a couple of jolts here and there. Very good, claustrophobic, well done horror thriller. Very well acted. The atmosphere in this thing is fantastic. I just wish that, you know, the trailers weren't so misleading. So overall, It Comes at Night was a very solid movie, but it kind of left me feeling almost as depressed as I felt when I watched Logan. So beware, ladies and gentlemen, there's no happy ending at the end of this thing. It's just very much a survival horror film at its best. So if I were to give it a rating, I would probably slap a 7 out of 10 out of it. I thought it was really solid, very well directed, very well shot. Oh my God, there's some fantastic, almost like John Carpenter, Dean Cundy-esque shots in this movie. So probably a 7 out of 10. If I had to give it a rating, I would definitely recommend seeing if you're a horror fan or if you're a fan of just good indie cinema with great acting and great characters. Fantastically done. Just not the film that I was hoping it would be. So Loisos, I hope you get a chance to watch that. And I'm sorry for talking your ear off there. I know you didn't get a chance to see it and you were really looking forward to it, but at least you have something to kind of chew on now that you've heard me blab on about it for a little bit.
Yeah, well, that certainly sounds very intriguing, Justin. And the trailers definitely hooked me. I am very much looking forward to watching this film because, as you say, A24 Films consistently puts out great quality films. So I have not gotten a chance to watch It Comes at Night yet, but I absolutely will based on your recommendation and what you just said.
Awesome. Well, I definitely recommend it to everyone out there, like I just said. But there's a couple of films that both Nick and I have missed and that we probably won't ever watch. So I know you watched a couple of movies in the last couple of weeks here. Are there any movies that you've seen that you want to give us some insight on that you've watched?
Well, I saw Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Oh, okay. So what was your outcome on that? What did you feel about that one?
Yes. Well, you know, The Pirate series is a series that I've been a fan of. It's not high art, but it's consistently enjoyable popcorn, summer popcorn entertainment. They got progressively more bloated and convoluted as they went on. This film feels a little bit more back to basics. It's essentially, they've essentially soft rebooted it, much in the way of, you know, The Force Awakens Jurassic World. It's very stripped down, back to basics. And what I appreciated about the film is that it gets rid of a lot of dead weight, but it also takes the time to close some loose ends of the series. In a way, this kind of feels like the final chapter until you get to the scene after the credits and it teases more films to come. But this is your standard pedestrian, shove popcorn in your face and watch an entertaining flick. Johnny Depp is back as Captain Jack Sparrow, and this is a role that he is just feels so at home in, and he's great. You know, Johnny Depp, people like to slag on him a lot.
The earpiece.
Yeah. There's all these reports from the set of him being very almost lazy in his approach to acting now. We hear a lot of his personal, his marriage life, and the fact that he spends so much money on wine.
Like over $100,000 a month, supposedly, on just wine. Which is insane.
That's insanity.
But when you think about it, though, when you're Johnny Depp, though, I mean, that makes total sense. Especially if you play a character like that many films in that drinks every single day. You know? So, I mean, I don't know.
Exactly. And in this film, Jack Sparrow is drunker than ever. I mean, he's stumbling from scene to scene. And, you know, it's fun. It's funny. There's a scene where he's going to be executed, and he's in a guillotine, and there's a huge set piece involving him being stuck in the guillotine, and it's very slapstick, it's very over the top and goofy, but it's fun, you know? And in this film, Javier Bardem plays the villain, and it's basically the same plot as the other films. Jack Sparrow pissed him off at one point, and he's coming to get
him. Coming for revenge,
exactly,
right?
Yeah. Exactly, coming for revenge. So it's the same plot. Basically, when you come to a Pirates film, you know what you're getting into. I enjoyed it. It's not a movie that I'm going to be thinking about for years to come. It's very much a disposable summer popcorn flick. I enjoyed it, but it's not essential viewing.
So would you recommend it to our listeners or fans of the series that haven't had a chance to watch it yet?
I would recommend it if you're looking to kill some time. I would recommend it if you're a fan of the series and want to see some closure to some of the loose ends from the other films in the series. I will say, as a fan of the series, it is a little frustrating that this film seems to retcon certain events from the previous films. But at the same time, I appreciate the attempt to make this feel like this is the culmination of the series in a way. Of course, the end teases that there might be another film or a trilogy of films or whatever. As long as Disney keeps raking in the cash, then they'll keep making these movies. And it is what it is. It is what it is. And what it is a disposable summer popcorn flick.
Awesome. Well, you know, we're going to get to our featured review here in a few minutes. But before we do that, before we take our break here at the opening of the show, there's that little segment that we like to call, What Are You Drinking?
I'm back! Puke and Rally! Yeah.
I'm going to throw it to you, Loy Sauce. I require you, anytime you come on to the regular show, to at least have a beer or something that most people would consider a beer. So I'm pretty sure you have what you normally drink when you come on the show, because you're not the film buff. You're not the beer buff. You're not the beer lover that Nick and I am. So what are you drinking?
Well, you're wrong. I'm not drinking a Dos Equis, Justin. So
what the hell is it?
Sorry to disappoint you. I'm actually drinking a Stella Artois, Belgium.
Okay. Solid beer. Used to drink those quite a bit when I was younger. Not bad. If I'm at a bar and it's literally the only thing they have, I will not hesitate to grab one. If that's literally the only thing they have and I'm in a bar, you know, that's what you do when you're at a bar. I did go up to my hometown over the weekend, this past weekend. I did get to see Epic Film Guy Nick. Those on our social media platforms got to see that little picture of me and Nick. We were hanging out at his place. We actually were brewing some beer together. He was showing me how he brews his home brews. He did send me home with some, but I'm going to save them so I can react to them on the air next week and actually drink them with him. So tonight I'm drinking a beer that he himself recommended on Untappd. I got it while I was up in Binghamton, New York. It is the Roarback Brewing Company's Space Kitty. It's an IPA double imperial, 8% alcohol by volume and 96 IBUs. I have to tell you right now, Loy Sauce, this is most definitely one of the best beers I've had in the past couple of years. And it sports this awesome label. We were talking about this before the show. I'm a guy that definitely halfway decides on getting a beer or not based on the label. And it's got this cute little, cool little tabby cat wearing like a space helmet. And it's really cool. Well designed. I love it. So this beer is good. It tastes good, Caleb. Definitely recommend it. So that's it. There it is there. I'm looking forward to drinking those homebrews that Nick made, though, next week when he gets back on the show. But until then, we're going to do our featured podcast clip and our trivia clip for this week. So stay tuned, and we will be right back.
Hello out there, everyone. Hope you are well and you're enjoying this Nicholas episode with Justin and Loy Sauce. And you need to sit back, relax, and crank that audio up to the highest decibel because it's time for our featured podcast, The World of Row. And now I wanted to feature Row for a couple reasons. Number one, because he hosts a fantastic interview podcast that I've actually been on a couple of times. Not recently, not anytime recently. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to get over there and give him a visit, but I absolutely, absolutely love him. I love his show. I love whenever he talks to his dad, especially the conversations are always so amazing. His dad's such a cool guy, and that's actually the clip that I want to roll out for you guys here. It's just a snippet of a two-part interview conversation that he had with his dad, and I'm also cutting together a special something for Ro for his 75th episode, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. It drops on Friday, the day after this show releases, so please, please go over there and check that out. And he and his wife, Valerie, just welcomed a brand new baby boy, Jude, into the world, so congratulations, guys. I'm going to go ahead and we'll spin this clip, we'll get into trivia, and we'll be back with Justin and Brian's review of The Mummy.
There was a guy that posted something on Facebook, and it made a lot of sense to me because all these veterans, all you veterans out there, I thank you, I salute you, thank you for your sacrifice. They get paid like, you know, the lowest ranking.
They're what, NBA?
No, in the military.
Oh, yeah, they don't get paid a lot.
You know, 30,000-40,000, whatever it is.
Which is not enough.
No. And they sacrifice arm and limb and, like the saying goes, all gave some and some gave all. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they're trying to do away with their benefits. And all these professionals, NBA, baseball, football players getting millions and millions of dollars for playing a game. And these guys are at war.
And this is it's a hobby.
And they want to take away their benefits. What's wrong with this country, man? What's wrong with this picture? I think the military deserves a lot more money, I think.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do a lot, and I hear it all the time, and I'm just like, you know what? You don't get enough.
No.
You don't get enough at all.
No.
15% off a meal is not enough. 25% is not enough. You need to get...
22 veterans a day commit suicide.
Wow. PTSD stuff?
Yeah. I remember your grandfather, my dad. Mm-hmm. He was wounded in action, declared dead. I remember him saying, I never want to see a gun, not even a BB gun.
Wow.
At home.
Yeah.
I mean, back then there wasn't PTSD or nothing like that. I mean, you went to the VA.
But you was like, get over it. You go on with your life.
Yeah, get over it. And nowadays, wow, it's amazing. So again, all the veterans out there, I salute you and thank you. Thank you very much for your sacrifice.
Yeah. I had a friend one time. He went to He went to like a Chick-fil-A here in town. And he was a military veteran. And the manager was at the Chick-fil-A. And Chick-fil-A, most of them, some of them are franchised.
Right.
But they have, they're known for excellent customer service. Right. The most of them are. Mm-hmm. And he said, do you offer any military discounts? And the manager's like, no. And he got upset. He's like, how come you don't have, you know, they got into this big argument. Needless to say, he said, I'm not going to Chick-fil-A ever again. Mm-hmm. And I go, why? He goes, they don't give military discounts. So that's kind of messed up.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm just like, you know, the guy served the country.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. That's still longer than any of us will ever serve. Yeah. And you should still give respect.
Yeah.
And I see military people and I think them, they're like, well, it's just a job. I go, yeah, it's a job that I'm not doing. You're doing it.
That's right. And 24/7. And you don't get paid overtime.
No. It's a set pay.
Wow. I was never in the military, but...
You wanted to be in so bad.
I tried, but because of my ACL, they didn't want me. But I worked for the Navy for 30 years, and I didn't serve in the military, but I worked for the military. And I knew everything there was about them. Their terminology, their ranking, their rules and regulations, and so forth. But, man, it's... And it's not for everybody.
No.
And last night when we went to that place, what was the name of that place?
Hobrod?
No. That was today at noon.
Oh, okay.
I forgot. Lisa took us. It's like a Mexican taqueria.
Oh, Taco Palenque.
Taco Palenque, yeah. Right then and there, the people that were sitting next to me, it was a brother and a sister, and they were both retired.
Military,
Air Force and Army. And we started talking, She was originally from Panama.
Wow.
She became a U.S. citizen, and she served in the Army, and he served in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And we got along great. I had never seen this couple. And what, it's amazing how the conversation started.
Because you said, thank you for your service.
No, because I didn't know who he was. Because
they weren't in their fatigues or anything. They were retired military.
Yeah, civilian attire.
Huh.
But Nicholas or Isabella had St. Peter's Catholic Church uniform. So she asked, Isabella from? Where was it? Mm-hmm. And we started talking from there, and we just ended up talking.
You told him you worked at NAS Corpus.
NAS Corpus, Corpus Christi Army Depot, Kingsville, El Centro, Key West, and so forth. But...
Do you remember when...
They sacrificed.
It's time for our June 2017 Trivia Challenge, and we're going back to movie soundtracks. So if you're not familiar with this from March, basically I'm going to play a 10 to 15 second clip of a movie soundtrack, and you got to let us know what film it's from. That's all you got to do, what film it's from. So I'll go ahead and I'll play that clip right now. Do you think you've got the answer? Get at us by email at epicfilmguysny@gmail.com or hit us up on Facebook and Twitter at Epic Film Guys, and we will see you at the movies.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks for sticking with us here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. It is time for our featured review for this episode. We're going to be talking about a movie that hit theaters last week. That was Alex Kurtzman's The Mummy. Now, this is another mummy movie. We've had I don't know how many mummy movies throughout the history of film. The last mummy movie that was a huge hit in theaters was the 1999 Stephen Sommers film starring Brendan Fraser. That is very near and dear to my heart. I absolutely love this movie very, very much. But this is Universal Studios. This is their attempt at rebooting this franchise and starting what they're calling a dark universe. So we're going to dig right in here real deep, Loy Sauce, and we're going to talk The Mummy. But this is about an ancient princess that's awakened from her crypt beneath the desert, and she brings with her a malevolence which will grow over millennia in terrors that will defy human comprehension. That's literally, you know, the official description that I found. But the film opens up and we meet Tom Cruise's character, Nick Morton. They mention the name Nick like 1,000 times in the film. Well, you heard it. I must have heard it, but I forgot it because I had to look it up before we did this review to remember what his character's name was. So the film opens up and what we're witnessing is some beautiful, amazing location shots of historic Egypt. And we witness this character named Amenet, who is supposed to be the heir to the throne to rule Egypt. Things don't go her way. It doesn't happen. Evil gets in the way. She ends up killing her dad and trying to use evil to gain her power. Hey, we've seen it before. It's a basic setup there. We go to modern time, and this character, Nick Morton, played by Tom Cruise, basically is like a black market buyer and seller. He gets antiquities, these special items that are very rare. He finds them. He goes into dangerous areas to get them, and then he attempts to sell them. He's supposed to be kind of like a bad dude in a way. He's not trustworthy. He's kind of a thief in a sense. So we meet him at this situation, which, you know, honestly gives an awesome action sequence where he's trying to get into to gain this one item. An airstrike is called in, and the airstrike just accidentally blows a hole in the ground. And what do we find, Brian? The tomb of where this mummy has been hidden safely away from Egypt, further along in Iraq. And I loved how they gave a subtitle on the screen to tell you currently known as Iraq. Like, we don't already know. You could have just said Iraq. You don't need to explain that. So they go in this tomb, and they basically awaken this mummy. I do not agree with the current critical consensus for this film. I'll tell you that right off the bat, because there's some good stuff here. And we're going to get into that good stuff. We're going to get into the bad, too. But I feel like the first 45 minutes of this movie, that's the movie that I was hoping to see. That's the movie that I got. It's when they try to dig into the world building and they try to do what Marvel tends to do so well, if you love Marvel, that is, that you realize that not everyone can follow the same formula. So I would rewatch the first 45 minutes of this movie again because it was thrilling. It was entertaining. It was energetic. It was, you know, fun. There were great quips. There were great one-liners. There were great comedic moments. And there was some beautiful location shots. There were some beautiful set pieces, and the production design in the movie is fantastic. Make no mistake there. I feel like the main thing that I walk away from with this movie is they had all the right ideas in a sense, but the execution ended up failing in the long run. That, and you know, the one thing that, you know, starting off this film, and I get that movies like this, they're not necessarily required to have this. Characters that mean something. Characters that are developed, characters that come from a certain place that make you care about it. Number one thing I want to get into real quick is Nick Morton's love interest, which is Jenny Halsey, played by Annabelle Wallace, horribly miscast in this film. She is absolutely horrible in the movie. She is so wooden with her performance and her dialogue delivery that I literally was almost laughing. There's a scene in the film where they're putting the sarcophagus onto this plane after they find it, which, by the way, they never explain why they're putting it onto a plane. They find it in the ground. They lift it out. And then she's like, this is over 5,000 years old. And I'm like, oh, how do you know that? Have you ever seen it before? There's certain things that they give you, certain lines of dialogue that make you believe that these characters should know what they're talking about, only to find out later that there is a possibility why they know what they're talking about, but they never expand on it. They're just, you just kind of are accepting what these characters are spewing out of their mouths. And the connection between Jenny Halsey and Nick Morton are that he kind of seduced her and spent the night with her. And the first time we meet them together, they're arguing over the time they spent together in bed and whether it was like 30 seconds or 10 minutes that they had sex.
Right, and that's their great love story. That's what you're supposed to connect to. That's their love story.
You're supposed to connect to that. Yeah, but I mean, I get it. It's 2017. People do fall in love and get married after having one night stands. When the dude Jack, you know, gets off in 10 minutes, it's true. It happens, Brian. But this is a movie I could get past it, except for this is supposed to require a deep connection throughout the film, so that way you care about these characters and their relationship, and it just does not work.
You don't. Yeah, you don't. And I think Annabelle Wallace might be a capable actress, but she, I don't think she was given much to do here. She's really only there to be saved by Tom Cruise over and over, and to introduce Tom Cruise to the world of Prodigium, which is the organization, the secret S.H.I.E.L.D.-like organization.
S.H.I.E.L.D., hello.
Yeah, basically, that Dr. Jekyll runs. The, overall, the cast is capable. Tom Cruise, and I love Tom Cruise. I think he's, especially in these action blockbusters, he's a very dependable actor. You can always depend on Tom Cruise to give a good performance. I think he was horribly miscast here because this role, I do, because this role was Nick, the role of Nick, he's a smarmy, cocksure kind of slime ball, like a young Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones type. And you needed someone like a Chris Pratt or someone who can pull off that kind of swashbuckling ne'er-do-well. And I don't think that Tom Cruise is right for that particular role.
I get what you mean. In a sense, I know what you're saying, because he's usually cast in these likable roles for the most part. I mean, he tries to be a badass in Jack Reacher. You know, he's known from the Mission Impossible movies, which we all love him in for the most part. I would say he's probably one of my favorite things of the movie. He gets thrown around a lot.
He spends a majority of the film getting his ass kicked.
He does get his ass kicked. But, he, you know, the reason why it's great seeing him in this movie, Brian, is because he does do his own stunts. And there are some really cool action sequences in the film, which I was really impressed with. And he does a great job during them. So, I mean, he's there for that portion. But I feel like I know what you mean in the sense that you're supposed to kind of despise this character somewhat and then end up liking him at the end and feel sympathetic for him. But in the end, it doesn't really gel. I still think he's one of the best things in the movie, but we're talking about Dr. Jekyll and yes, Mr. Hyde and that makeup. Let's get to Russell Crowe. What do you think of his performance? Because I think he was hamming it the fuck up. I think he was having a good time with it. I feel like they were like, you know what, Russell? You're big now. You don't have to put on any special costume or anything. We'll just CG the makeup on your face. The fight scene, we'll get a stunt double in there for half of it. You can just stand there and you know, quote lines. What did you think of Russell Crowe? Because I thought he was cheesy as hell. I mean, I love Russell Crowe, but I mean,
sure, it's a cheesy performance. But I, you know what? I laughed at a lot of things that he said. There's a great line when he's basically threatening to kill Tom Cruise to like examine his brain or something, to like cut open his because Tom Cruise is cursed in the film, so he wants to examine cursed. Him for traces of the curse. And Annabelle Wallace's character comes in and picks up on the conversation, and she says to Dr. Jekyll, I thought you were just going to examine him. And he's like, yes, examine him by cutting him open. And that made me laugh. And his timing was great.
Well,
and
you know, that's a line that fits so perfectly in a universal horror film, a universal monster movie.
Exactly.
And that's where I'm going to lead the conversation to right now, because that's one of the things that I felt like the film had right for the most part. I liked Sophia Boutella as Amunette, as the mummy in the film. A lot of people were complaining, and you and I, even when we first saw the first trailer, were like, doesn't that look like kind of close to what we saw as Enchantress in that shitty movie last year, Suicide Squad? Well, in this case, I thought she gave a pretty solid performance. She's got very little to do in the movie. She does get fully nude in the movie more than once. But she's beautiful in the movie, and she gives this sultry, sensual, yet almost horrific performance as this character. She's bound in these bandages for a period in the movie, and she is CG'd. But I feel like what we saw of her, she gave a certain presence in the movie. Unfortunately, the script does not allow that to be delivered in the way that I was hoping it would be. I think she was good. Is basically what I'm getting to. I think, you know, a lot of the hate for a female mummy, I think it was an interesting idea, and I think she did a good job of it. What did you think about that?
No, I thought she was very good as well. She kind of almost made the mummy a little bit sympathetic.
She did, yeah.
I don't think necessarily that we needed to have a sexy mummy. That's kind of the
opposite. No, I know what you mean. Believe me, I was thinking that. I was sitting there, I was like watching this, and I'm like, whoa, man, she's sexy, that I'm like, wait a minute. When I watched this trailer, I was complaining that they were giving us a sexy mummy, and that makes no sense. But I'm like, I mean, when you look back to the Stephen Sommers mummy, I mean, you know, dude that played mummy was all, you know, in great shape, oiled up, and you know, so there's a double standard for that. I'm like, there shouldn't be, but there is. So dudes complain about that and vice versa, but it makes sense. I see why they went that route.
Yeah, but she had a couple moments of pathos as well.
Yeah.
Where you almost felt sorry for her, even though her character is a crazed murderer. But she was threatening, I thought, and I found her presence very welcoming in the film. I hope we see more of her, even though at the end of the movie, you know, the mummy has been defeated, but we don't know if she'll return.
Yeah, so let's get to that ending. We're just going to wrap things up here as we just continue to talk about the cast here and what we actually did like and didn't like about the movie. Again, I'm going to go back to this. I get why major critics are hating on this. I can see some people disliking it, but by no means is this thing dumpster fire. I really don't understand that. I mean, when you watch the first 45 minutes of the movie, it's solid, good popcorn fare. There's some great jolts. There's some great scary moments. And that's the thing that I like the most about this thing. The points that it did get right, Brian, were when it would fuse horror well into action, and it had the atmosphere right, and the set pieces were set up properly, and the production design was beautiful, and it really depicted that universal monster movie feeling that you wanted. It felt like I could see the Wolfman jumping in a scene and fighting the mummy, and it felt like they were setting it up perfectly. But again, it all starts to fail when they try to introduce this whole monster verse very quickly, interjected. It doesn't fit into the movie. I wish that it was just done as like a side thing at the end. And that's where I feel like the film fails. When they try to do that and they try to throw it all together at the end, you're kind of bored. You had commented that to me as we left. You're like, I was
so bored. It just got so tedious. I just checked out mentally after that expository, just blowing their expository load all over the place, and then you know, they didn't have any more. They jerked their wad too much, and they were, you know, they were dry for the rest of the film. And I just felt so, I wanted it to be over. I was just ready for the movie to be over. And it's a shame, because I wanted to be invested in where this universe goes next. But it was either tedious or hokey from that point. Like, there were a lot of hokey lines. Jake Johnson, we didn't even talk about him, but he shows up and he's dead, and he appears to Tom Cruise in like visions, very reminiscent to An American Werewolf in London.
They really pulled that card, because I mean, they had it in the back of their pockets, like, oh, no modern audience member is going to remember that movie.
Right. So then you have him showing up in the middle of scenes that are supposed to be full of tension, and giving one-liners that did not, it just killed the tension, because Tom Cruise is running from something. He shows up and says, well, that's right. That was intense.
He does run a lot. I mean, people, you know, the fans on social media are right. Tom does run from a lot of things in this movie, or he drives away from them, or he flies away from them. But he does run and jump away and swims away from lots of things in the movie. Let's go ahead and let's get our collective thoughts together. Let's finish this review here and talk about how we feel at the end of it. Where do we want to see from here? I'm going to say right off the bat, I am upset that the film failed the way that it did, because I feel like it started off so strong, going for what they were going for. Fusing comedy, action, and horror is not very easy in today's world in film. It's not a very easy thing to do. It's usually one thing or the other. And I feel like it did it well for a certain period in the film, but that it did end up failing in the long run. So what am I hoping out of this? I'm hoping that, honestly, we see more of these movies with people that take more time and patience. You started off this whole review talking about those suits in the room, and it's those same suits in the room that ruin half of these huge blockbusters for us week in and week out during summer movie season. Just got to let these people have their visions. Now, I know that there were like five or something writers on this. Even when we saw the credits on the film, I was like, ooh, there was a lot of people that had their hand in this. And Alex Kurtzman is not like a seasoned director or anything. This was his first really big movie to direct. But I feel like, you know, it's serviceable. And again, ladies and gentlemen, this is a Mummy movie. Previous to the Stephen Sommers trilogy, you know, think about the Mummy movies that we've gotten, even the Hammer films, okay? They're not high art. They're fun. They're horror. You're supposed to be scared and have a good time. I am very sorry that this thing did fail. That it did. There's making no mistake about it. It did fail. It had some great ideas. But overall, I would like to see more out of this dark universe, this dark monster verse. And I'm going to give my rating right now before I throw it over to you and your closing thoughts. I would give this film a 5 out of 10 rating. It was close to a 6, maybe even a 7 about halfway through. I did not hate this movie at all. Overall, is it a quote unquote good movie? Definitely not. But it had a lot of cool ideas, a lot of great concepts, a lot of chilling moments for me. And I had goosebumps in quite a few of the action sequences. And I thought it was legitimately terrifying in spots. So for me, I'm going to give it some credit. 5 out of 10 for me. And throwing it to you, Loy Sauce, for your final thoughts. And yes, your rating on The Mummy.
Well, I'm going to have to go with a middle-of-the-road reaction on this, Justin. Right smack dab in the middle, 5 out of 10. I hate to always agree with you when it comes to ratings, but hey, that's just, our tastes are very similar. I thought this movie had potential. The first half hour, 45 minutes or so, really led me to believe that this would be, that the critics would be wrong. But it just, as soon as it gets to the Marvel Universe desperate world-building attempt, I checked out of the movie. I found it to be incredibly boring after that point. Boring, boring, boring. I almost fell asleep. And I think Tom Cruise was horribly miscast. He just came across as a confused old man for most of it. With the stupid look on his face, he's constantly
He looked confused, yeah.
Constantly confused, like, huh? What's going on? And like that, that's not the kind of character that Tom Cruise normally plays. He's cool, collected, he has it together. I don't think he was right for this part. I do think Alex Kurtzman, why hire Alex Kurtzman? He has no credentials. He's written a couple good movies, a couple horrible movies.
It's the same reason why Warner Brothers hired, you know, Jordan Vaught Roberts to do Kong Skull Island, or they originally hired Gareth Edwards to do Godzilla. They're getting these up-and-comer, you know, these young people to helm these big budget movies. And that's what studios have always done when they had faith in young people, Brian. I mean, I get what you're saying. I mean, he's got a lot of producing credits. He's got some writing credits, but I mean, he did a noble job, I feel like, but in the end, he kind of had his concepts too mixed up to give us the final product that would have been a success.
And I understand that. But, you know, hire a woman or hire someone of color or hire, you know, the director of The Witch, Robert Eggers, or the director of It Follows, someone with horror, indie horror cred. Alex Kurtzman, I'm sorry, he's a hack. This Ooh. Movie did not have much directing flair at all. And even though I am excited to see what is next in this dark universe, they have the cast lined up. The Bride of Frankenstein is next, so we'll see how that goes. I will be in the theater watching it, wanting it to be good. The Mummy was a very middle-of-the-road experience for me. The first half I was really enjoying, really invested in. Second half, once they started introducing all that dark universe crap right smack dab in the middle of the movie, I checked out, Justin. 5 out of 10 from me.
All right. Well, there it is, ladies and gentlemen. We both gave it a 5 out of 10 rating. If Nick was on the show, I know he would not be because he's no longer doing ratings. But until we figure out collectively what we're going to be doing with a rating system on the show, it is what it is. So we're going to take a quick little promo break here. We're going to go into our Spielberg clip. We're going to be doing Spielberg month for our challenge in July. I'm so, so excited about that. So we're going to do that clip real quick, and then we'll be right back with a little special segment of Epic Previews. We'll be right back.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've got more big things coming in the future of the Epic Film Guys podcast, and this is your chance to be part of the next one. Now, if you're a longtime listener to this podcast, you know that we used to do challenges, okay? Every October, horror movie challenge. Every November, never seen it November. All right, now we're bringing back challenges with a little bit of a twist. All right, this is going to require you, the listeners, to participate and let us know what it's time to watch. So coming up next month, in the month of July...
Get me Steven Spielberg.
He's unavailable.
Then get me his non-union Mexican equivalent.
Schindler and I are like peas in a pod. All right, so yes, We're going to do 5 Spielberg films for the month of July, and it's going to be up to you, the audience, to pick those films. So go ahead, write us with your top 5 Spielberg flicks of all time. We're going to compile the list by the end of June, and the top 5 films on the list we're going to watch and talk about on the podcast coming up all through the month of July. And we're going to have prizes for those of you who are going to play along at home. We want you guys to get involved. Let us know what Spielberg films you're watching on top of the 5 that we're going to do that month. And we'll have prizes. So stay tuned for more details on that. In the meantime, please get those picks over to us. You can call FanViews at 607-444-1473. You can email us at epicfilmguysny@gmail.com. Facebook, Twitter, at Epic Film Guys. Get at us. Let us know your Spielberg top 5, and we will do the challenge.
Listen, Senior Spielbergo, I want you to do for me what Spielberg did for Oscar Schindler.
Schindler es bueno. Señor Burns es el diablo.
Listen, Spielbergo, Schindler and I are like peas in a pod. We're both factory owners. We both made shells for the Nazis, but mine worked, damn it. Now go out there and win me that festival.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks for sticking with us again here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. That was our Spielberg clip. Prepare yourselves for Spielberg month for the month of July. We're going to jump into something really special for you guys. It's a little segment on this show that we like to call
Epic Previews.
In the world of Endicott, New York and Herndon, Virginia, 2 Epic Film Guys dissect the latest movie trailers in a segment we like to call Epic Previews.
All right, Loy Sauce, here it is. The biggest trailer to hit in quite some time landed. It was Friday last week. It is the first teaser for Black Panther, directed by Ryan Coogler. This is about T'Challa, the new ruler of the advanced kingdom of Wakanda. He must defend his land from being torn apart by enemies from outside and inside the country.
Tell me something. What do you know about Wakanda?
It's a third world country.
Textiles, shepherds, cool outfits.
All affront. Explorers have searched for it. Called it El Dorado. They looked for it in South America. But it was in Africa the whole time.
If you haven't watched Civil War, if you haven't seen what Black Panther can do in that movie, go watch it right now. He's literally probably my favorite thing about that movie. He's amazing, and I absolutely adore Chadwick Boseman as the character of Black Panther and T'Challa, and I really love that casting. So right off the bat, I'm going to tell you that before we get into our thoughts on the trailer. That said, I'm not sure how I feel about this trailer, Brian. I'm going to throw it to you first on your initial thoughts on the first mini little teaser for Ryan Coogler's Black Panther.
Well, Black Panther has always been one of my favorite superheroes ever since I was a wee lad, and I picked up a comic book, and I was fascinated by this character because he's a warrior, he's a king, he's a scientist, he's so many different things wrapped up in this one character, and for that character to be a black man, you know, is must have been pretty inspiring at the time for a lot of young black comic book readers. So I was very much looking forward to this trailer because I wanted to get a feel for what the film would look like. I wanted to see the cast. I mean, you got Michael B. Jordan, Daniel right. Kaluuya. You have Chadwick Boseman as the Black Panther. So you have Lupita Nyong'o. So you have this amazing cast.
Yeah, it's a fantastic cast.
Absolutely. I just wanted to see how one of my favorite heroes, especially after how awesome he was in Captain America Civil War, would be represented on screen, directed by Ryan Coogler, who, you know what? Fruitvale Station, amazing. Creed, amazing.
Oh,
film.
Yeah. If you haven't, love that movie.
If you haven't yet seen Creed, stop the podcast right now, watch it, and then come back and continue listening to the podcast. But at any rate, I liked the trailer to Black Panther. It did not wow me. It did not get me super pumped. I can't wait. Oh my God. I watched the trailer and I liked it. And I think why I feel such a disconnect from it is because it just feels like a collection of brief shots. It does not really tell a story. It does not really feature the Black Panther character much at all. It's really just showing you Wakanda, establishing Wakanda, the different tribes.
Yeah, and the look of the film, I feel like, and what you're really going to be in for, because I feel like, if anything, Brian, they're really trying to go out of their way to go, hey, elbow in the ribs. This is different. This is supposed to be different, so we're making it different. And the one thing that bothers me, and the reason why this trailer did not hit me the way that I wanted it to, is because, Brian, it feels extremely forced. And I get they're trying to take a different route with that. It's just a teaser. It's not a full trailer. I would have liked to see more character moments. One of the things that I loved about the trailer, and it's the thing that I was hoping for in the film, is the shot where Black Panther takes out all those military dudes in the dark, and it was shot really well, and he's going to be frightening, and he's a badass dude. He's in this black costume, and he's like a creature of the night, almost like Batman without a cape, and he uses that to his advantage, and his stealth, very highly trained, and I really liked that aspect of it. But I mean, come on, man, that ending shot of him doing the flip off the car, they should have waited to show that. That CG is very far from done. And I know that movie studios, they do that a lot in this day and age. They do it actually almost with every single trailer, especially with a movie that's being teased. I mean, this doesn't even come out until what? Next
February.
Next winter, dude. Next winter. You know, so we're pretty far off from the release of the movie. It wasn't necessary. We've already seen Black Panther doing awesome stunts and jumps off of cars in Civil War. They shoved so much to kind of get as much as they could into the trailer to get people excited. And I get that. That's the whole purpose for a teaser. But for me, Brian, it just didn't work collectively.
I understand what you're going for, because this does seem like a trailer that is trying hard to differentiate itself from the pack. But I still remain excited for the movie. I will absolutely be there.
Of course.
7 o'clock p.m. Thursday show in line to see Black Panther.
Brian, the trailer just seems like it's trying a little bit too hard for me. Other than that, I'm still excited for the film. I'm still really looking forward to it. It's still the only film on Marvel's slate that I'm actually somewhat excited for. Of course, yeah, Infinity War, everything else they have coming out, I'm sure will be entertaining. But for me, this is the one character that I'm looking forward to seeing hitting the big screen in their solo debut. So that is what it is. I was not wowed by that trailer, but hey, Ryan did like it more than I did. So that's the end of Epic Previews. Nothing else major jumped out this last week in trailers. We're going to take another quick break before we end out the show. This is our featured actor, Tom Hanks. We're going to throw in a little clip there, and then we'll be right back to close out the end of the show. We will be right back.
What's the pool on me up to right now? What's it up to? What is it? $300? Is that it? $300? I'm a school teacher. I teach English composition. This little town called Adley, Pennsylvania. In the last 11 years, I've been at Thomas Alva Edison High School. I was a coach of the baseball team in the springtime. Back home, and I tell people what I do for a living, and they think, well, now that figures. But over here, it's a big mystery. So I guess I've changed some. Sometimes I wonder if I've changed so much my wife is even going to recognize me whenever it is I get back to her. And how I'll ever be able to tell her about days like today. Ryan, I don't know anything about Ryan. I don't care. Man means nothing to me. It's just a name. But if, you know, if going to Rommel and finding him so he can go home, if that earns me the right to get back to my wife, well, then that's my mission. You want to leave? You want to go off and fight the war?
All right. All right, I won't stop you. I'll even put in the paperwork. I just know that every man I kill, the farther away from home I feel.
Thanks again, ladies and gentlemen, so much for sticking with us and listening to this episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. We are wrapping up the show here. That right there, what you heard, is our featured actor, Tom Hanks. Right there, one of the best actors of all time, finally making his way on the featured actor list. So excited about that. Last week's clip was from The Burbs. Nick did a fantastic job at picking that. One of my favorite Tom Hanks roles ever. Who knows what he's going to pick for this week, because he's going to add it in as he edits it. We are going to clear up the show here. And I just want to thank Brian Loy, a.k.a. Loy Sauce, for jumping on the show and filling in so we could cover for Nick and just talk about The Mummy. It Comes at Night. He wanted to talk about Captain Underpants. And I said, no, you're not allowed to do that.
Go see Captain Underpants. Everyone who's listening, go see it. It's fun.
All right. So you said you liked it. So you did like it, right?
I did. I liked it very much.
I feel like it's not really in the public consciousness right now. It's not like a movie that's making waves or anything. But hey, man, you liked it. It's a movie. We are the Epic Film Guys podcast. So that's his recommendation. Go see that. Next week, who knows what we'll be talking about on the show. But we'll definitely be killing it here. Nick will be back on the show. And I'll be drinking one of those home brews from Epic Film Guy, Nick. Definitely looking forward to that. And I just want to take the time right now to thank all of our fans out there and our sponsors. All of our sponsors, we love all of you, every single one of you. We wouldn't have the show without you. We appreciate you more than you know. So this is going out to you guys. And just thanks for listening week in and week out. If you have not yet, be sure to go on and head on over to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review. We're kind of lacking there, ladies and gentlemen. We know we've got more people listening to the show week in and week out that have not left us a review yet. So head on over to iTunes and leave us that 5-star review. We would love you so, so much for it. We would appreciate all that you can do for us. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. And again, thank you, Loy Sauce, for jumping on the show. And where can
people... Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. I mean, you are an epic film guy, regardless of, you know, what other people like to say. You're epic. You're a film guy. You come on the show. And we do have a couple of B-sides headed your way this summer. I promise, ladies and gentlemen, we got a couple of things lined up, a couple of films here. One film that did celebrate a 30th anniversary on Monday, a couple of days ago, was John McTiernan's Predator. I was on Pete from Podstalgic's podcast, Hydrate Level 4 presents Podstalgic. We talked about Predator. You should go check out that episode if you haven't yet. We had a fun time talking about that movie, one of the best sci-fi action movies ever made. Go and check him out. Fantastic show. You know, he has a lot of different guests on week in and week out. Great, great podcast for talking movies. And I want to throw props to all of our Movie Pod Squad brothers out there, our network out there, from Super Movie Brothers to So I Married a Movie Geek to Bud's Beers and Brutality to Netflix and Swill, all our fellow podcasts out there, The Story Behind, The Countdown, Movie and TV Reviews Podcast, you name it. Now on Technicolor, there's so many to name. We love all you guys. You all fucking rule so much. It's such an honor to be part of this network and to be in a group of such awesome film critics. So this is going out for you guys. But to end out the show, I am Justin, and I'm an Epic Film Guy.
And I'm Epic Film Guy Brian.
And you hear it week in and week out. But you know what, guys? We will see you at the movies.
The Epic Film Guys are a proud member of the Movie Pod Squad Network. Check out more amazing shows like Now in Technicolor, Who Spiked the Puns, and Cult 45 at MoviePodSquad.com.
What is happening?
Yes!
You're just an Eskimo back on this call. I'd rather have you.
I am drunk as fuck, though, too, so.
You just fucked my mind, man.
This is my favorite song, man. How did you know?
This is my jam.
This shit came out when I was like a
fucking
senior.
I love
fucking
Roxette, man.
Know you're something in the wake of your smile.
I love her gozer hair.
Woo! By the look in your eyes, yeah.
Fuck me, I'm drunk.
I only played this because Caleb mentioned it over in the Skype.
Oh, God damn it.
When she's calling for you.
Caleb, thank you for turning on your video just to do that.
Nothing else we can do.
That's awesome, man.
Yes.
Perfect. Hi, Vanessa.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
You know what I did, Nick?
What?
I listened to my heart and I opened another beer.
I fucking love you. What do you got now?
Must have been
I have. Yeah, of course. I have Evil Twins from Tennessee with Smoke. Tribute to John's homeland.
I hate you.
So. Yeah, I'm just. God.
This
damn,
one's good.
So
it tastes like a barbecue. You like smoke beer?
Yeah. I fucking love it.
Yeah.
Why did I do this?
It's the smokiest like beer I've ever had, other than Hamburger
so
and Norwegian Wood.
On my pillow. See the winter.
What is going on right now?
Awake slowly. It's
a sad
silence. Ask questions, Shampoo. Just don't ask questions.
Hey, I'm going with it. I just want to know where this is going.
Touch me.
I've been
now.
Hurt before.
I close my eyes and dream away.
I don't want to stop it until Justin stops singing.
But I lost it somehow.
But I lost it somehow.
I'm never happier than when I do these fucking megasodes. I swear to God.
This is amazing.
Oh my God.
I fucking love you guys. All right.
This is what we should have just done for 2 hours. Just the right. Movie Pod Squad sing along.
Yeah.
I'd listen.
Man. Oh my God. All right.
Are you out of control?
Yes. Wildly out of control.
Are you the man behind the mask?
Fucking hate you. Is this what tonight's show is going to be like?
I'm the man behind the mask.
I'm the man behind the mask.
And I'm out of control. Man behind the mask. He's the man behind the mask. And he's out of control. I'm the man behind the mask. I'm the man behind the mask. And I'm out of control. And he's out of control.
Coming to theaters this October.
We do get some fan mail for the list, but basically just people telling us that they love him.
It will take over.
He's not normal.
There's nothing to worry about.
When you least expect it.
You're gonna be just fine.
Who knows, man? He might just become me.
I think he and I would do a great show together.
I wanna up your fucking ass so bad.
Everybody can really sink their teeth into it.
Dude, it's all him.
I'm your number one fan.
Keep doing it, please.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
He's dead.
He's dead?
The medication's working great, and honestly, I feel like, you know, if I stay sober...
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
He's not gonna come out at all. So I don't know why you're bringing any of that up.
You can't run.
He's becoming an entity all to himself. He's making things happen the way he wants them to happen.
You can't hide.
He's being whatever he wants to be
from...
Justin's list.
The list.
You sick fox. You've seen way too many movies.
This film is not yet rated.
Your guide to cinema etiquette for the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. Tip 43.
When attending the cinema with your good friends or significant other, don't assume anyone else has any interest in what you have to say. So, always remember...
Whisper, fuckface. It's not rocket science. For more useful cinema etiquette, join Paul and Wayne on the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast at Podomatic on iTunes or your favorite podcast app.